Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 401, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Brian Federline from briansTechnology.com. Sorry for butchering your name there, Brian. How are you doing?
Hey, it's all right, Jeff. I'm doing good. Keeping busy. Trying to enjoy some downtime here.
Nice.
It's been a rough week.
Yeah, those... Some weeks are better than others. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you definitely got that right.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. And, I think you were asking me a question about some of the books and stuff that we were talking about on a couple different shows. And I just asked you, I said, hey, do you want to, would you like to become a guest on the show? And you were like, really? Me?
Yeah, I was really taken aback kind of when you extended the olive branch, so to speak. And I was like, I am nervous. I'm not even going to lie. I'm nervous, but it's fun. I'm glad. I'm really excited you got me on, and I'm looking forward to just shooting the breeze a little bit.
Sounds good. Yeah, we just, you know what? This show is based around all of us computer techs just kind of talking and sharing things together, and it's real laid back, like I said before. So yeah. I'd tell you what, let's start off by, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and basically how you got started in computer repair.
All right. So I'm from Long Island, New York, tiny little itty bitty island that just hangs in the southern eastern region of New York. Really small. I got started in computer repair kind of much like everyone else, I guess. I broke a lot of my own equipment and I was really frustrated with it. And I just tinkered with it until it was fixed or really broke, and then I threw it away. I was probably about 12 or 13 at the time. My dad really wanted me to get into the computer field. He said the industry was going to grow and explode, and that it was going to be a really nice spot to be if I, you know, when I needed a career per se. So I just kind of dove right in. Believe it or not, I started with web design, and I was using Adobe Dreamweaver. I quickly learned that I had no artistic or graphic skills, and it turned out really ugly. I made a really ugly website, and I immediately threw it to the curb. I never went back to that. So I immediately switched my thinking, and when I was 15, so 2006, I built my first computer, which is actually the computer I'm talking to you on right now.
Oh, nice.
Haven't had to do any upgrades or any of that. It was a really kind of a tough time building the machine. It was a complete learning curve. I've never pieced things together. I've never, you know, looked for parts and looked at specs and all that. So it was nice to get a feel for it and then put it all together and power it up. I was, oh my God, it works. It was like a eureka moment. But yeah, it's still alive and kicking. And unfortunately, when XP died, I made it into a Linux box, so I know you're not a big Linux guy, but
I don't know why everybody says that. I love Linux. I'm just saying. Cody Cooper, I love Linux. I'm just saying out there, just so you know. No, I don't have a problem with any of those things, but yeah.
Yeah, I had to turn my other cheek on Windows. For me to get another operating system after purchasing Windows XP, and then, you know, a couple of years down the line it goes out of commission, I needed an alternative that wasn't going to cost me, because, you know,
right,
money doesn't just grow on trees.
Exactly. No, I hear you. No, there's a lot to be said for that. And I'm of the mindset that you use what works for you in any given situation. And for a lot of things, you know, a lot of these Linux distros and stuff like that work just fine.
Yeah.
I always try to keep up with the latest, greatest, you know, Windows operating system, just so that I'm very familiar with it. And I kind of get a hands-on of using it. And to be honest with you, I like the latest, greatest stuff. So that's just how I am.
And that's me to the T. I mean, I hear you. My wife, she's like, you bought this, you bought that. How much money are you going to spend? I was like, I got to stay on top of this. How am I going to know everything if I don't have it, if I don't have my hands in it?
And exactly.
Windows 8, I didn't immediately want to go to, but I did get a bunch of calls like everyone else. I got this Windows 8 machine. It's not working. Could you take a look at it? And I went into it. I was like, I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't really worked too much with Windows 8, so you're going to have to bear with me. I know they moved things around and added that whole tile interface, but now I could kind of cruise my way around it. And with the Windows 8.1 update, it was it's kind of a breeze now. I had a bunch of machines in actually recently with Windows 8.
Oh, yeah. I think the eight, once it went to 8.1, just the file menu and stuff that they went back to, just changed a lot of things as far as getting around that system and having the tools as far as a tech just in place for you to be able to do the things that you needed to do to fix those machines. There's still some quirks in it that can kind of be frustrating. Like if you want to get into safe mode or something like that, you've got to do some changes and and stuff. In every laptop or every operator or every, you know, manufacturer, Dell, HP or whatever is a little bit different. Yep. As far as doing that. Now I have a couple of cheat tools that will do that automatically and bring me to the right menu so I can go into safe mode. But for the most part, I rarely ever have to go into safe mode anymore.
Really?
I don't.
I had an Acer machine come in and it was just completely shot. It would boot up to the blue screen of sadness and it would say, "Hey man, something's wrong. Could you fix me?" And you couldn't even get into safe mode. You couldn't do it. I ended up having to contact Acer and finagle some discs.
Okay.
I ended up getting it running, but it took me a while because I hadn't had the hands-on experience with all the blue screen of sadness. It's not, you know, it's not the same. You can't just press F8 and go right into safe mode anymore.
Well, there's a little trick that actually there's several different ways to get in, but one of the things you can do is when you actually go to the Metro style screen and go up to where the power button is at the top, if you click on the power button and as you're holding the shift key, if you press restart, that will bring you into all your menus for getting in the background of that machine, your system restore, all your tool settings, diagnostic tools. You can boot into the operating system that's on there as far as restore partition. And you could, you know, wipe the machine from there. You can do everything from there.
I was unaware of that.
The reason I know is because I had to do it the other day and I was looking for a simple way to get into that system. And to me, that was the simplest way. I used to have to, you know, I would boot in and I'd have to change the menu style going from the Eufy BIOS to the old standard BIOS.
Yeah, the legacy.
Exactly. And once I did that, I was able to get in. But I wanted a quick way that once I was in the operating system, I could restart it right from there
and
get
there.
Back in. Yep. So that's a little tip for everybody out there. Something I just learned the other day that, you know, I had to look up.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that. So I actually just jotted that one down.
So it sounds like you got, you know, you're messing with things, building machines. That's awesome. I think that's what a lot of us do. You know, a lot of us start off, my first machine was a Dell, first PC was a Dell. And, basically what I did was I did upgrades on it and then went from there. And then I had somebody build a machine for me and then I did upgrades on that. And then I started building my own machines and have been building my machines ever since.
Yeah. I wanted a gaming machine. I like similar to you, I had a couple of HPs. I broke them. I broke them. They were not functional at all after I was done with them. And I said, you know what? I'm going to figure out what exactly is going on here. And I put it together. I pieced it together. I sat and I read about every component, I figured out how they were going to work and the best, you know, the best bang for my buck at the time.
Right.
And I just pieced it together, and when it powered on and it booted up into setup and installation for Windows, it was Eureka, and I was kind of hooked ever since. It just got worse. Exactly. I just started tinkering with everything.
You know, it's pretty bad. I was just thinking about the other day, you know, I've always used some sort of, you know, either DVD or CD for loading my operating systems. And I still have the discs, and I still do use them sometimes.
And oh, yeah.
What I started realizing was that things were easier if you just put it on a USB stick and plug it in, as long as it'll boot from the USB stick. And it's so much faster to do it that way. And I've been a holdout for probably up until about the last 6 months.
So. Yeah. You know what? It was tough getting into the switch over to the USB, booting from a USB, because I, like you said, I had discs. I had tons of them. And if there was ever a problem, it was just pop this disc in and we'll go for it. And now that portfolio of discs, that little, flip binder full of discs, it's gone. Yeah. I got flash drives. They're all labeled. They're in a drawer. Tons of them. It's just a change of the time. So it's interesting.
Oh yeah, exactly. Now I still do keep my discs around, because there are some times that either a particular machine, even if it's a machine that normally would boot from the USB, sometimes there are things that block it. So a lot of times I can get a disc to run. But the reason I really started doing the USB sticks is because I was getting laptops that would have either corrupted or broken CD drives.
Really?
And so, you know, I mean, I could have done a couple of things. I could have taken an external, plugged it in, ran it from there. And it was just like, it's kind of a pain. So let me just...
It's tedious.
Yeah. So now I just put the operating system on it, you know. And the other thing I did, and it's not as easy nowadays, on my Windows 7, I basically have disks that the EI.config file is changed to. It'll allow any of the versions on there. So all the way from basic all the way up to enterprise, once I put the disk in, it just asks me. It'll ask me for a key. If I don't want to put in a key, I don't have to. It'll ask me if I don't have a key, it'll say, which one do you want? And I can just click on it and go from there. If not, then if I put in a key, it'll recognize which one it is, and it'll install it and, you know, verify the key and all that kind of stuff. Windows 8 is a little bit different now. I can still get around it, which is nice. I figured that out. I was able to, once I put it on a USB stick, I added a EI.cfg file to the USB stick, and you just got to figure out which version do you have. Do you have Core? Do you have Professional? And then a lot of times, if the machine came with Windows 8, you're not going to be able to get it to verify with Windows 8.1, even though you're going to be able to upgrade it afterwards. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just, you know, load the Windows 8 back on there and have to do the install. And there are some tricks to get around it. I just haven't spent enough time with it to make it worth my while. So I just kind of use an older method that seems to work for me so far. So
I heard you talking about the EI.config file. And believe it or not, I did a Windows 8 reformat. And I flipped the laptop over. I'm looking for the sticker. Can't find it. I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, it's going to ask me for a product key, and I'm not going to have the slightest clue where it is, what it is. Maybe it's in a booklet, and this guy threw it away. But I later learned that it's in, I guess, the newer version of the BIOS has it already pre-programmed in so that Windows can just pull it, so to speak.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and the hard thing sometimes is, a lot of people don't realize this, but when you're using something like Jelly Bean Key Finder, and you're looking at the key, if you're looking at an OEM key for an operating system, it's not always, even on the Windows 7 machines, it's not always going to match the sticker. So the problem with that is, unless you have the OEM software, you're not going to be able to use it. And technically, you're not really supposed to put another OEM version on that machine, whether it be a Dell, HP, which I have a hard time with that, because I feel if it's my machine, I have a licensed copy of Windows whatever on it, I should be able to put a vanilla version or a Dell version or whatever version I want to put on it.
Whatever version you want, because you technically own the copy, some form of an OEM copy.
Right. So that's the way I've always gotten around it. Now, I've heard from, you know, some of my friends in the industry, they basically, you even said earlier, you just basically call the manufacturer, and 9 times out of 10, I'm hearing people are actually able to get the OEM discs sent to them and put them in, you know, put them in back in working order. So that's kind of
good. You know, what surprised me was how fast the tune is changed when you identify yourself as a, you know, a computer repair technician, and basically you're an extension of their company at that point, because you're the liaison between them and the customer. So when I would call either Dell or Acer or any of them, I'd be like, hey, you know, I got this computer, I need some recovery media. They're like, okay, you know, what's your credit card number, what address are we sending it to? And now I communicate to them that, you know, I am a computer repair tech. I got a customer who has your machine. They need some recovery media because their system is corrupt. And they're like, okay, where are we sending it? No problem, no charge. Just give us an address. We'll get it right to you. It's really quite impressive.
That's very interesting. I'm glad you said that, because I've often wondered. It used to be back in the day, it seems like you almost had to fight with these people.
Yeah.
You know, to get that stuff on there, because, you know, no, everybody knows that when you get a computer, nobody sets up the recovery disks. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
except me, you know, I might do that, but, yeah. Most people are not going to do those recovery disks. So a lot of times, even when I'm having somebody upgrade from one computer to another, the one thing I have them do is I have them bring it to me. I said, listen, you know, and I don't tell them like this. I don't tell them that you're not going to set it up correctly. That's why I need to do it. But I just tell them, hey, I'm going to set it up. I'm going to make sure all your updates are done. I'm going to make sure you got a working antivirus. We're going to, you know, we're going to get this machine, and I'm basically going to move your data from your old machine back to the new machine, and I'm going to give you everything back, and it's going to be ready to go. You can go online and do whatever you want to do. And you just have to explain to your customers in a way that they understand that you're giving them a service, which you are.
Exactly. It's the whole package of a computer setup. Countless customers of mine have turned down repair work and said, oh, you know what, I'm going to just go up to, you know, Walmart or Best Buy and get, you know, one of those $350 laptops. And I said, okay, you know, you could do that, but all your data is still on this machine. It still needs to be transferred over. You know, you still need to be set up, get some updates, and get yourself all set up. I mean, I can do that for you. I can definitely make it a lot easier for you, but it's going to be the same concept. You know, you're going to pay me for the service. And back in one of your shows, I think it was one of the Podnut shows, you guys were talking about how people have a tough time paying for intangible goods, intangible services. And it's true. It's a struggle. Most people, you tell them a price and they're like, really? Well, can't you just click, click, click and be done?
if it were that easy, you could do it.
if it were that easy, you wouldn't be calling me.
Exactly.
It's pretty much what it is.
Oh, we go back and forth on a lot of that stuff. It's frustrating because it really, I guess it's our job to teach the customer exactly, you know, what they need to, basically not just what they need to hear, but we're in the business of protecting them, you know, taking care of them. Because how many times do you, you know, I get a machine, I'm setting it up. What's the first thing that I do? Oh, there's a 60-day trial of McAfee on there. Okay, rip that off.
Take it right off.
they're not going to use it. They're not going to pay for it. So I'm just going to put, you know, on Windows 8, I leave Windows Defender running. You know, on some of the other machines, I'll put in, you know, Microsoft Security Essentials. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do sell a managed service. So, and I've had people where I've replaced their computers and put them on a managed service because they get infected all the time. And this is the only way that I can help keep them clean for a longer period of time. So,
and that's something I was interested in. I've never been able, I guess, to word to the residential break fix customers how exactly to get them on a managed service plan that's going to work for them. Because most people, they're like, oh, it's a monthly fee. I don't want to pay you that.
Right.
I just want you to come in when it's broken and make it work. And goodbye. I'll see you, you know, in 2 years when I break it again. It's been a tough spot in my business. Like, I haven't seen to break into the managed service yet.
Well,
been trying.
Yeah, I think it's a tough spot for everybody. Most people are not, especially residential, are not going to want to do that. A lot of people, what's happened with me is people will come and their machines are just so badly infected. They're like, how can I stop from getting infected? And I basically tell them,
you can't.
You really can't. I said, I can put some things on here, some free tools and maybe some even paid for tools that will help you from stopping to get infected so quickly. I said, but the problem is, I said, this is social engineering. So things are going to pop up. You're going to do things that you think are okay, and you're doing nothing wrong. It's just they catch you in an off moment. You click on something you're not supposed to. Next thing you know, you're infected. That brings in their brothers and their sisters mm-hmm. and everybody else, and they have a big party, and your computer all of a sudden won't go online anymore. And then you bring it to me, and you go, hey, here, fix me. Well, yeah. How long have you been dealing with this computer like this? Oh, it's been like that for like 4 months. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I just tell people, I said, I have a managed service. And I said, you know, I'm going to make sure that all your updates are done. I'm going to give you a good antivirus, a good paid for antivirus. I'm going to make sure that all the regular things, you know, Java, Adobe, all these things that where the holes are in the system are
the
updated.
Big vulnerable ones.
So you don't have to worry about it. It just runs. I said, do you want to just be able to open your computer up, go online, do the things you want to do without having to worry about this stuff? It's going to be $25 a month. A lot of people go, oh my gosh, 20, you charge what? And I'm like, that's because for the amount of stuff that we do,
yeah,
I feel that it's worth that $25 a month. Now, here's the thing. You can pay me 6 months up front, it's $25 a month. I said, you pay me a year, I'm going to give you $50 off. You're going to get it for $250. Yeah. So you save $50. But here's the thing. A lot of times when we're doing remote virus removals, it's $129. So yep. Here's the upsell on that. Okay, it's going to be $129 to clean this virus off, or we'll give you, you can do a managed service. We're going to give you the virus removal for free. You got to do a minimum of 6 months, or if you want to save $50, you can do the full year, and it's only $250.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will actually bite on that, and they'll go, well, I'm going to pay $129 anyways. Why don't I just pay the $150 or even $250, and I'm good for the next year?
Yeah, it's a similar mindset to the, well, oh, you want, you know, $200, $250 to repair that laptop. Why don't I just spend $100 and get a new one? It's, I guess, the same mindset is, if you're going to charge me $129 to do a virus removal, why not just spend a couple extra bucks and get you to make sure I'm good for another year?
Exactly. So that, I mean, that's kind of, because to go to a person and just say they need, you know, before they ever come to me for a virus removal and tell them, hey, I've got a managed service that I'm offering. You know, you know how many people get on that? And I'm going to tell you right now that I've ran into other customers that have had managed services that I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what this managed service was doing. And they're legit people. It's not like they're these scam companies.
Yeah, the fly-by-night guys.
Right. But I'm like looking at it and I go, what'd they do for you? What were you paying them? You know, people give me numbers all over the place, and I'm like, you know, it's one of those things. For $10 a month for a managed service, I just don't think you're going to get the same level of protection that you will at $20 to $25 a month.
Yeah.
You know, yep. So. But anyways, so that's basically what we've been doing with, you know, with that type of stuff. But what kind of jobs and stuff have you been working on lately? I know we talked about you know, the operating systems reinstall and getting disk and all that. But what have you been working on?
I had a couple of those, which, you know, were just easily done, and it's just another day. But I just recently, 2 days ago, had a laptop come in. It was an HP laptop, and the customer dropped it off to me and said, "Listen, it was working, and now it just doesn't want to turn on." I was like, all right, let me take it in. I'll see what I could do. You know, I plug it in, hit the power button. Sure enough, you know, it turns on, gets to BIOS, gives me the nice little white cursor, and then reboot. It was stuck in a boot loop.
Oh.
Yeah. So the first thing they said to me when they dropped it off was, I don't care if this computer works. I've got the most important data in the world on my hard drive. The same words every customer says.
Sure.
All the data on my hard drive is so important. I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to image your drive. We're going to work with the image. I'm going to then put your drive back in the computer, see what we could do, make it work. If we break anything, we have the image. We'll just replace what we need to do, or we could transfer your data to another machine with the image. I'm like, oh, awesome. So I take the hard drive out of the laptop. I go over to my bench machine, plug it in, and my bench machine is the Linux box. And I power up the hard drive, and it says, can't mount the hard drive. It's stuck in hibernation. Please boot the machine, shut it down, and try to remount.
Wow.
And I said, what? It's stuck in hibernation? So a couple minutes of quick research, I was able to find a command to put into the disk manager equivalent on Linux to append it to the mounting options and basically tell it to delete the hibernation file. Because if it's stuck in hibernation, if it has the hiberfile.sys file on the drive, Linux won't mount it in a read-write mode. It'll only mount it in a read-only mode. And that doesn't help me because I need to image the drive and get the data.
Right.
So I was able to get the system to delete the hiberfile.sys file, and then it mounted like a dream right into read-write mode. I imaged the drive, and then I said, well, if it was just stuck in hibernation, maybe that was the boot loop. I plug it back into the machine, still in a boot loop. So I imaged the drive. I get everything set, go back to it, and I was able to figure out that the master boot record was deleted or corrupted. It didn't exist. The hard drive had four partitions, a system, a data, the local disk, the recovery and HP tools, which I guess is their pre-boot environment diagnostic tools.
Right.
And none of those partitions seemed to have a Windows installation on it. But I knew that was a lie because I saw the Windows installation when I had it on my bench machine. So I just went into – I booted up the recovery disk, and I was able to just punch in the command into command prompt, fix master boot record on, the partition that I needed, rebooted, nice and fine. Contact customer, tell them, it boots up, everything's fine, but – I really should run a virus and malware scan on this because the master boot record just doesn't disappear.
Right.
It doesn't just become corrupt unless something goes wrong. Similar to what you were saying before, the social engineering, I'm running, my Malwarebytes scan and it picks up a file, voicemail with a phone number .exe. I'm like, oh man. So I send him a text. I was like, did you recently receive an email that said you got a voicemail and you need to download the zip folder? She's like, yeah, I got it. I got an email from WhatsApp. And I was like, yeah, that's a virus. It's like that's what was the problem. I mean, it was a head scratcher for about a day and a half. I couldn't figure out what was wrong, why it was in a boot loop. And then I just had a eureka moment. I was like, you know what? It's got to be the master boot record. If it's not seeing a device, it's just going to reboot and try and find one. So it ended up working out. And I receive emails to my business email all the time with these. You missed a voicemail from, Microsoft Outlook, and you skipped an invoice. You forgot to pay us this week. So just download the invoice and forward us a check or send us a wire. And all of them contain these executables. So believe it or not, I had some downtime and I booted up a VirtualBox and deliberately infected that VirtualBox just to see how this virus spread from the initial click. Okay. And it was really an interesting little experiment.
No, that's pretty cool. Now let me ask you this: the Linux box that you use, what distro are you using to do your tasks to look at these hard drives?
I'm running Ubuntu 14.04.
Okay.
And it's pretty solid. I've been running Ubuntu since 12.02, which was the distro before it.
Right.
And on my old laptop, my Asus laptop, I think I even have the one prior to that, which was like 10 something. But it's solid. It's probably the most solid and comparable to the Windows experience, so to speak.
Okay.
That you could find. It took a little bit to get used to, but now it's heavily terminal, which command prompt. It's heavily terminal based. A lot of things are easily done through the terminal. So it took a little learning these commands and the different types of the different types of commands, they're different from Windows, how to navigate terminal and command prompt.
Right. Okay. No, that's cool. And just so Cody Cooper knows that I do have a box with, Linux, Ubuntu 14.04 on it. I always forget to use it. in these types of cases. There's a lot of times where I just use my Windows box, you know, to get around the issues and work with stuff. But then I always forget that there's that nice tool that you can mount something in Linux and, you know, kind of get around some things and do what you need to do. One of the other things we've been talking about lately is FTK Imager. And what I've learned is I used to use a Kronos. Well, I do use Acronis for my personal machine, but everything's working.
Okay.
Now, Acronis on my Windows machine, I have a little bit older version. What'll happen is if you have a corrupted hard drive, it'll fail. So it won't go through the whole, it won't make the image, it won't clone it, all these things. With FTK Imager or even DD Rescue, which is a Linux tool.
I was going to say that's what I used. Okay. I used DD Rescue to do the image.
So both of those are going to make a raw data file, which is cool because you can manipulate it and do with whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things that I'm going to really start to use because there's been a lot of times where, you know, I'm trying to clone a dying hard drive, but I can still get the information off of it just by, you know, either using FABS Auto Backup or just dragging and dropping things off of there without getting, you know, doing too much more damage to the hard drive. But I think I'm going to start using some of these other tools just to make that raw image just so in case something happens because I probably should do it all the time, and I don't.
Yeah, because you have it byte by byte. It's a raw image. Right. It's, you know, the most manageable, I guess, of the image files you could get. But I did have to go back to my Windows machine. I had to go back to my Windows laptop to finish that that HP repair that I did. I needed some form of a virus scan, which I didn't have their password, so I just dropped it into my external bay, powered it up, and ran kind of an offline Malwarebytes scan and AVG scan, and it worked like a dream. And I also had to use my Windows machine to burn the USB ISO because my Linux box just refused to do it.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I have both distributions, the Windows and the Linux, just in case I run into a little speed bump.
No, that's great.
Unexpected speed bump.
Right. No, that's good. Again, there's different tools for different jobs, and I think that there's enough room out there for everybody to, you know, use what needs to be used at the time. So
yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Hey, as soon as they get Call of Duty and Battlefield over on the Linux operating system, I'll switch.
Yeah, I was pretty big into the Call of Duty. That's pretty much why I built this machine. I built it as a gaming machine with all the, you know, the beast type hardware you could get, specifically for the Call of Duties and you know, a bunch of the other shooters. And now I honestly don't even game anymore. I got this beast machine that doesn't really get used to its full potential.
I'm sorry. I keep getting older and I still enjoy those games. whoever, just don't look at my Steam account because I think Call of Duty Black Ops, I have in a 9-month period, I had over 500 hours logged in there. So that's just multiplayer.
Wow. Now, yeah, you know what? If I'm playing games lately, it's just been the NHL hockey games. I got a PlayStation 4 literally just to play the new NHL game.
Yeah. Oh, my kids like playing those games. You know, you know what? The consoles are great for sports games. They really are.
Yeah.
That's where to play those. Or the, you know, the fighting games.
Yep.
Stuff
the
like
UFCs
that.
And all that.
Yep. So, yeah, those are cool. But I spend most of my time in first person shooters or, you know, Assassin's Creed type stuff. So, but anyways, I digress. So what else have you been working on? So that's a pretty interesting, that's a great tip. I think you've given out there about the hibernation file. Cause it's something I wouldn't have thought of
for those. Let me see if I could click on it real quick. For those who want to know exactly what I was talking about, there's in Ubuntu, if you go to your disks, you know, your disks manager, mm-hmm. you'll get the list of all the active disks plugged in. There's a little gear in the upper right corner that says more actions, and then you could hit you right click on it. No, the gear is down in the lower corner, and there's edit mount options, and basically you turn off the automatic mount options where basically the drive dictates what's going to happen to it. And you put into, where is it? It's, you know, the extra mount options. There's, I think the command was like comma remove underscore hyber file, something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
It was incredible, and it worked like a dream. I just plugged that in, hit save, authenticated with my password, shut the external bay off, turned it back on, and it was mounted in read-write, full read-write mode, just like that. So it was really kind of interesting to see that happen. I didn't think it was going to work.
Wow. No, that's great. No, great tip.
Yep. But other than that, the only other real cool job I guess I had was I had this Dell Inspiron 1545 come in, and it just wasn't powering on at all. So naturally I said, all right, it's probably the DC jack or the battery or the plug, basically everything in the power system. I take it in. The plug is fine. I checked it with the multimeter. It's getting all the good power readings. Can't check the battery because it's dead. So
right.
I go in and I tear open the laptop, and this particular Dell doesn't have the DC jack soldered to the main board. It actually has a daughter board with all the USBs and the LAN port and the DC jack on it. So I was able to just kind of pull that board out and inspect it, and it was pretty well damaged. So I suggested to replace it. The part was extremely cheap. I think it was like $6. I was like, you'd be foolish to not just replace the this board and just get it to work. And I ate my words there, because it didn't work. And we determined it was the motherboard, which even the motherboard is extremely inexpensive. I'm pretty sure I saw them on eBay for like $60.
Right.
So I suggested that we do that, and he's like, you know what, man, let me hold off. I still actually have it hanging around here. He's like, let me see. I'm going to get some money up, and maybe I'll just buy, you know, one of those $350 computers. And I said, all right, well, I'm still going to have to transfer your data. I gave him the full disclaimer that, you know, you're going to get a new computer, but you're not going to have your data, and you're going to want it set up. So he's still kind of sitting on that, but I was like, what are the odds of a motherboard going bad? I was like, trust me, man, it's got to be the DC jack. And then, nope, it was the motherboard.
it's hard with those, you know, it's hard to, you know, test some certain things on her. I know a customer came to me one time, and basically there was a set of diodes that were, you know, on the motherboard that weren't letting the computer power up. And this was on an older laptop. So what some people were doing out there is they were doing on these broken diodes, they were the tiny ones, the micro ones.
Oh, wow.
That are just, you know, flat to the board almost. So what they were doing was taking a little piece of solder, and they were connecting them, and they were able to get the motherboards and stuff to work. So a customer one time, you know, I had looked it up, and he was telling me he had seen some things on there, but he wasn't real good with soldering and stuff. And I go, I had to turn the job down. I'm like, I said, I can't warranty that type of work. I said, I could probably do it and it might work. I don't know how long it'll work for. I said, here's the thing. When those things break, they break because there's a power problem somewhere, or
exactly,
they just wore out. And you, even if you were to put another one in or connect it, it's just going to fry something else down the line. So I don't feel comfortable doing it, even though if it was my own machine and I just needed it for a secondary machine or something, sure, yeah, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, I probably would have done it if it was my own machine, just for the sake of doing it.
But right.
No, I wouldn't go and give a customer that kind of work.
It's like, let's replace
that's
the motherboard, or we'll replace the motherboard, or you know, you can buy a new machine and we'll move everything over. So
I
was going to say, I do like the, a lot of the motherboards don't have the, solder on, DC jacks anymore. Most of them are plug in. So
I know, I was really surprised to see that, because I told him when he initially brought it to me, I said, you know what, here's the deal. If it's the power adapter, that's cool. But if it's the DC jack, it's probably not going to be cost effective. I was like, it's probably not going to be cost effective for you to repair this. It's a pretty old machine. But then I pulled it apart and I was like, oh my God, it's on its own board. Like, sweet. This is a gift. So I looked up the part. I was like, oh, it's $6. This is a win. And I ate my words pretty quick on that, because it was the motherboard. But
it's hard to tell. And I still don't have 100% way to test, you know, test motherboards to see where it's getting power to. I know there's a ton of different tests you can do with your multimeter, but it's really how much time are you going to spend to sit there and isolate the problem? Either everything's working on there, or if your external, you know, components, your hard drive and stuff like that or whatever are working, but you can't get the thing to power up. You know, a lot of times it is the motherboard.
And I later went back to the original daughter board that I pulled out, and I plugged in the adapter into the wall, plugged it into the board, and took some readings off of the underside, and the daughter board was 100% fine.
Okay.
It was really, really brutal looking. It had a lot of like I guess corrosion, and it was just brown, and I was like, this has to be it. Like, how could it not be it? It had all the makings of being the faulty part. And then, you put the multimeter to it and it worked just fine.
So did they spill something on it or what?
I don't know. You know what? I never really asked him. I gave him the option to do the repair, or, you know, we'll get him set up with a new machine and I'll move the data for him. But he hasn't gotten back to me yet. So it's just kind of sitting here collecting dust.
Gotcha. I had a machine that just came in this week that had somebody spilled tea on their keyboard. And fortunately, this is where when you buy a little bit better machine than your $300, $350 machine, it will help you down the road. Because what ended up happening, I'm like, listen, I said, I'm going to have to, without looking at it, I'm going to have to take this thing apart. And he brought it in and plugged it into my wall right away before telling me that he had spilled a drink on it. And I'm like going,
oh my.
As soon as he told me, I'm like going, we're going to power this down. We're going to unplug this. We're pulling the battery out. Hold on. Okay, here's what we need to do.
Before you set this thing on fire, let's unplug it and find out what's going wrong.
So I said, you know, because it booted up. And I was like, I said, okay, that's a good sign. But here's the thing. I said, a lot of people don't understand, when you spill something on the keyboard, it will take every tiny little line and crevice in there and go down to the lowest part of the motherboard. It'll end up on a hard drive, on the RAM, on all the ports on the underside of the motherboard, in the fan, whatever. I said, so what I'm going to have to do probably is pull this thing apart, scrub it with alcohol to make sure we get all that stuff off there so it doesn't corrode your board. I said, how long has it been? He's like, 10 days. Okay, I wish you would have brought it to me sooner. But in this particular case, I took the whole thing apart, popped the keyboard out. It was a nice, one of those nicer lighted keyboards. And when I pulled everything out, everything was clean. I said, so I called him up. I said, hey, good news. No liquid got anywhere but inside that keyboard, because it must have held all the liquid in. So I said, all we got to do is replace the keyboard. Because when he was pressing on the keys, it would, you know, it would
stick in
three key presses. And so, you know, that usually means that the motherboard's fried. So I was able to do it. You know, I mean, but here's the thing. Here's a spill that's going to cost him $100.
Yeah. And you know what? It's probably better that it was a lighted keyboard too.
Yes.
Because it had that extra bulk to it. It had the lights and a little trap places for the liquid to spill into.
Well, it had the tin foil, basically, for all intents and purposes, all across the bottom that covered, you know, the tin foil sticker that covers right underneath the keys, because you got the lighting and you got all the electronics that pass back and forth. So obviously any liquid that got spilled in there was all trapped by that tin foil, never got through.
Wow.
So yeah, it was
lucky job there.
Exactly. I was like, whoo, because I said that would have been ugly, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely. I had one like that, but it didn't turn out the same way. It was coffee, and it ended up going all the way through the machine. And that was, we're going to take this and bring it to the curb. Let's get you on a new computer.
I just don't understand how a person, you know, and people don't know, and I guess I do understand that, but it's like, you know, I try to tell my customers, when you spill something, I said, just because you lift the computer up, you unplug it from the wall, and you shake the liquid out, and you think it's all out, I said, it's really not.
Yeah.
I said, you're going to go back, you're going to turn it on, and that's when you blow the motherboard. I said, if you had just kept it off and pulled the battery out immediately and brought it to me, I could have taken it apart. And most of the time, I can clean the whole thing and get it back together, and it works just fine, no problems. Other than sometimes there is no stopping. If you mess up the electronics in the keyboard, if that's where it mostly got spilled, that's, you know, you're going to have to replace the keyboard. And sometimes keyboards can be quite expensive. You know, they can be anywhere from $20 to $50, depending on, you know, the type of keyboard. So,
yeah.
So so we've talked about Linux as using tools and stuff like that. Now, what are some of your favorite, maybe, do you have any favorite hardware tools that you use in your business?
You know what? I actually got the iSesimo opening tool on your recommendation.
Okay, cool. I love that tool. That's awesome.
And you know what? It makes the keyboard jobs, like you had said, it makes them so much easier. Those little clips, so frustrated.
Yep.
And now I got the iSesimo and it's like bing, bang, boom, done.
Exactly.
Turns a 10-minute keyboard job into a 2.5-minute.
You got it. Yep, exactly. I wish I had known that tool was around before, because it's been around for a long time. I just never knew it was available.
Yep. I actually got two of them.
Okay.
I was like, they're so inexpensive. I'm going to just get two. If I bend, like really bend one or break one, I'll have another. But as far as hardware tools, I guess I got all the same stuff. Most of the techs have just little tiny screwdrivers, little tiny, Allen keys, all sorts of that stuff. My wife actually got me a little itty bitty super tiny USB mini vacuum for like a keyboard vacuum. So I haven't yet used it in the wild, but it works. It works incredibly well, and I think I'm going to use it mainly with laptops on the heat sink where the little fans, the little fins, I guess, get all gummed up with dust and stuff.
Right.
I could see it working well because it's got a little like brush tool, and it's really lightweight and super small. It's not really gonna do any serious damage. But
well, that's cool.
Other than that, I mean the main stuff. Just I got my external bay, my little mini hard drive, the laptop size hard drive, the desktop size hard drive, both fit into it. SATA powered, powered up, self powered, and. Connects via USB or eSATA. And other than that, just little tiny screwdrivers, little tiny everything.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I will, I didn't realize this because I've got the same thing, toasters, what I've always called them, where you stick the drives in because, like a piece of toast or whatever.
Exactly. And it just, you press the button, it pops right out.
Now, I have on my bench machine, which is behind me, I basically have an eSATA cord plugged in and also a USB cord. I've got them both plugged in. And the reason is because the, I don't know if a lot of people know this, on a Windows 8 machine, because I have a dock that's actually on top of my, on my computer case too.
Wow.
But you have to turn off a setting in Windows 8 so that it will not boot from that system if there's a drive in there. The normal setting is to always boot from that drive if there's a drive in there using any eSATA connection.
Okay.
So
that's weird.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought too. So the USB connection, basically is hot swappable. Now in Windows 8, you can actually change the settings in most of the BIOSes that I've seen to change it to make it hot swappable. Okay. And this is in the Eufy BIOS. So, and you can do, actually you can make on my particular motherboard, I can make any of my drives hot swappable if I want. So I can hook however many SATA devices, eSATA, whatever, up to it. And if I want it hot swappable, I basically can pull the drive, put another drive in, and it'll work. But you have to turn that setting on. Now, on my Windows 7 machine, which is my bench machine, you can't, not every BIOS will let you do that. So if you ever have a hard drive in there and you go to turn your machine on and you have the toaster powered on, it will try to use that drive as a boot drive. Now, sometimes that can be beneficial because you might need to do that, or you might be, just trying to test something out. But sometimes you'd be like, hey, why is this thing like booting up and it's not hot swappable? So eSAT is not hot swappable by default.
By default, yeah.
But USB is. So most of the time I end up using the USB because you have to use the eSAT on startup too. If you don't have that hot swappable setting, and that's the frustration about it. So
yeah,
just a little tip out there for everybody.
Sweet.
All right. Go ahead.
But I also have I don't know where I heard it. It very well could have been on the Podnuts network. It could have been, I could have seen it on Technible. Someone suggested, I don't remember who, I have this app on my phone. It's called Pocket Admin, and it has saved me so much frustration. I know it's available for Android. I don't know if it's available for the Apple devices, but this really lightweight app, Pocket Admin, it literally has everything you need. It's got post beeps, BIOS beeps, blue screen stop errors, everything. It's huge. It's a massive, I guess, resource, so to speak, for the tech. Instead of when you're on site Googling a stop error, you can just quick go to the app and you have it. It pulls up in kind of a nice professional looking interface, and it gives you everything. I definitely wanted to put that. It's got PowerShell too, and network services. It's got port numbers for the common protocols and software types. That was a biggie for me too. It had a lot of the stuff I needed for my other job, opening ports and that kind of stuff. But definitely wanted to throw that tool out there too.
Oh, thank you very much, because I've never heard of this app, Pocket Admin by MaxNode Development Team.
I don't recall who it is. Okay. Let me see if I can find it in my list, but I'm pretty sure that's who it is. I don't think there's very many Pocket Admin apps around. MaxNode Development Teams, yeah. This app, it's incredible. I wish I could remember who suggested it, but I don't. But thank you to whoever it was and where I heard it. But
yeah,
it's got
a great
RAID
find.
Types, BIOS beeps, BIOS post, for all different types of the BIOS manufacturers, Award BIOS, Phoenix BIOS, all that. It's even got RJ45 connection types for, if you're making cables on the fly, a little reference guide for you. But the biggie for me was the blue screen of deaths. Just being able to pull up a code like super quick with the detailed description of what it is, what it's likely to be, and so forth.
That's great. No, that's great. I just installed it. Hey, let's take a quick break for a second. I want to thank one of our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by D72. It's the ultimate PC technician's repair tool designed to automate your daily workload and dramatically increase your efficiency and ultimately your bottom line. D72 provides automation for system gathering, custom reporting, virus and malware removal, which I use it for all the time, Windows repair and comprehensive maintenance, which I also use, basic tweaking and app installations, data backup, keeping all of your favorite tools updated, which everybody knows keeping your tools updated on a USB drive is a pain. This does it automatically, so that your drive is always ready to go. Keeps your configuration and definition synced in the cloud, so that you can, no matter where you're at, you can always get the latest and greatest configuration and be able to use the tool the way you want to use it. It also has integration with your PSA CRM or ticket tracking software. It's nice to have those reports that you can basically put it in your ticket tracking software and keep an idea of how you're doing on that particular machine and what you've done to it. So when you go back and look, you have an idea of where you're at. New simple and descriptive interface for viewing and reacting to system alerts and also for running internal functions. You can build custom HTML reports with your pre-configured templates, and this is for your customer. Basically, you can build those custom HTML reports the way that you want your customer to see them, to give them the information they need without having a bunch of information that they don't understand. And everybody's business is going to be a little bit different. So that's a nice feature to have. You can customize apps or system alerts, which is awesome. You can, if you're running D72 in its automatic mode and you put a alert in there, and you can have it email you and let you know, hey, this system needs to be touched now. Thanks for letting me know. And you can go touch that machine and continue on from where you were at. Everything is automatically logged as you work within D72. So everything is logged as a report. You can look at the reports separately. You can combine all the reports together. It's a fantastic tool for keeping an idea of what you're doing. You can reorder all D72 functions, mixing and matching them with custom apps in your predefined auto mode routines, which I do all the time to get them the way that I want them to work, so that I can either touch the machine and, figure out the stuff that's not going to run automatically and then let it continue on and run all my automatic routines, which I think is great. And Nick is always adding new features. D72, automate, relax, get paid. Head on over to foolishit.com and use the offer code PODNUTS20. All right. So, we were talking about tools.
Yep.
And so did you have another tool that you had said you were using?
No, I really wanted to get the Pocket Admin one out there. I felt that's awesome. It was pretty crucial. I definitely wanted to pay. I wish I could give credit to whoever it was that I got it from, but it literally has saved a lot of time and foolishness on site. Nothing's worse than having to go to Google to get an answer for like a stop code. It's like, oh, what? You don't know that? And in reality, I could turn around and say, no, I don't know every stop code. There's hundreds of them, but it just looks better. It's a cleaner interface.
At that, I would probably turn around and say, do you know how to set the timer on your VCR? I didn't think so. That's why I'm here. So just back off. No, that's cool. No, I just downloaded it to my phone. I'm going to definitely check that tool out because there's a lot of times I try to carry PDFs and stuff in my phone of things, command line prompts, that, things that I need to use, to run certain commands. Cause I don't remember them all.
And that app actually has, tips for the command line for both or all three, the Linux, the Windows, and the Mac OS's for the terminals and command prompts.
Oh, great.
It's got all the common ones that you would need and kind of the syntax you would use it.
Very cool. No, that's awesome. So, very cool. I was going to ask you a question. I was going to say, so now do you work mostly out of your home? Do you travel to the customers or do customers actually come to you?
I do a lot of on-site. I know everybody's big into the whole remote support, which I have Screen Connect. I have remote support. Just my customers don't seem to go for it. They don't bite at it, which I don't mind because my customers are all pretty close. I don't mind the travel, and it's an easy $20 added to the invoice for travel time and gas pretty much.
Okay, now let me ask you this then. That brings up another point. Now, do you charge an hourly rate on site or do you still do flat fees for things?
Most of my services are flat rate. When I go on site, I don't usually do the hourly rate, especially if I know that the machine is going to work with me. If I don't know that the machine is going to work with me, I could usually figure it out within 5 minutes of being there and I could tell them, listen, it's not going to be worth it for me to sit here with your machine. You're going to rack up quite a bit of cost here. It's not what I was expecting. I could take it with me and it'll still be the flat rate fee, or you might have to pay me an hourly fee for me to sit here. I'm going to be here 2-3 hours because your machine's really slow. It needs a lot of TLC, and I try to stay flat rate because at least they know what to expect. With my customers, that their problem is price. It seems like the threshold is like $150. If you go over that, they usually just say, the hell with it. I'll buy another computer.
Right, right. No, that makes perfect sense. And I have the same philosophy. I'll go on site and like I said, like you said, within 5 minutes, be able to figure out what's going on and go. And I do the same thing. Hey, I can either bring it back to my shop, which is my home, or I can sit here for, my hourly rate. And, most of the time people say, that's fine. You can take it,
Yeah.
In matter of fact, a lot of people really like saving the extra money, because I charge a, travel fee to go out there, pick up and drop off. Yeah. They'll end up bringing it themselves just to save that little bit extra money. So.
See, I'll do the travel fee for, I guess I call it the site fee. For me to come on site, it's automatically $20 on top of whatever service you're getting, just because I have to travel to you and be there and spend literally my time on just your computer when I could be doing other things. But I don't charge if I'm delivering it back, because I'm really $20. Most of my clients are 5-10 minutes up the road, so my gas is already paid for at that.
Gotcha. No, that's fair enough. I charge a flat fee if I'm going to pick it up. The chances are I'm going to drop it off. So it's a little more than that, but not much more. And that's just because, quite honestly, I don't really like going on site, but there's times that I have to. So.
Yep. Sometimes they don't have the active net connection and you're forced out.
Yep. Exactly. So it's like, okay. But that's fine. If you do, you have any business tips that have worked for you and your business that you could pass on to somebody else that that would help them?
Be honest.
That's
just
a good one.
Be honest. If you break it, don't lie about it. Don't cover it up. It's not worth it. Just tell them something didn't go as expected. You ended up with an issue, and you know, make it right. Obviously, make it right by them, and just don't lie. It doesn't make sense. If they catch you in the lie, it's going to be bad for your business. Word of mouth goes down, and at least for me, word of mouth is pretty much my whole business. If someone has a bad experience, it's going to be bye-bye for me. But other than that, just stay sharp. Read like you like your suggestion, which prompted me to email you, read books or listen to books. I got an Audible subscription on your recommendation.
Too bad they're not a sponsor.
Yeah, it's just read the books, stay sharp, read the tech developments, stay on top of everything, try and keep your hands in as much as possible, all while specializing in something. You guys on the Podnut show were talking about I think it was specialized services or that kind of stuff.
Premium services.
But specialize in something, but don't be shy to learning new things. Cause to be honest, I learn new things every day with tech. I think I know, you know, I know a lot. I know enough to be successful at this, but you always got to read the latest tech news and just stay on it. If you want to stay afloat, stay on it, impress your customers, offer better solutions, and be honest. Honest is the top one.
No, that's great advice. I think that is the number one thing. You know, customer does come first, and you know, a lot of times people will go, well, I'm charging so little that, you know, it's hard for me. And you know what? It's like, charge a little bit more. You're going to get good customers. And then when you do make a mistake, it's not going to be that detrimental to your business, because you can be honest with them and go, I messed up and that's it. And I'm going to fix it and make it right, replace it, whatever I got to do. I remember there was a time, I hadn't done a power jack repair in a long time, and I was, I was desoldering it. And in the past, for whatever reason, when I first started doing it, I was having a hard time getting some of the solder to heat up enough to where I could get the whole thing out. So what I would do is I would take a pair of tin snips and I would cut the power jack in half. So what that would do is I could pull two pins out at a time.
Yeah.
You know, so it made it a little bit easier. Well, I went to do that, and this was a bad design on the laptop motherboard. And I remember seeing the PCB board push out when I had crushed instead of cutting it, I crushed the DC jack and it pushed out, and I'm like going, no, don't break, no. Don't break. So, I'm in panic mode. I'm starting to sweat and I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I, you know, put a bunch of flux on there and got it out. And fortunately it never cracked or anything. It was, thank God it was flexible. Went back into shape. I cleaned everything up, put the power jack back in, and you know, of course, after you get everything back together and you go to plug it in, you're going, please work, please work, please work. And you plug it in and it worked fine. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, what am I going to tell my customer? I'm basically going to have to go buy another motherboard, and, you know, it's going to have a power jack on it anyways. No big deal.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to have to do. So, yeah, we all make mistakes. We all do things that we go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But, I like that. Be honest.
Yeah, that and study your market area, study your competition, and charge what you're worth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no different than any other tech. I was the, you know, the $30 virus removal guy, just trying to get as much work as I can. And it brought the worst customers in. It gave me nothing but headaches.
Right.
And now I'm charging what I feel I'm worth, what my time is worth. And I've done, I think, 30% less work this year, and I've made probably 25% more income.
Exactly.
It's less work, more pay, and I'm okay with that.
Yep, exactly. And it makes it a little bit more enjoyable to do what you do. You know, because let's face it, this is like any other industry. You get into this business because you really enjoy working on computers, I think, for most of us.
Yeah, I had a huge interest in it. You know, once I got that, like I said, my first computer, once I got it working, I was hooked. I knew it was something I was going to do for a long time.
But you get to a point where you're sitting there spending so much time doing it and you're not getting, you're making next to nothing, where you got to go, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. Or you got to come to that point where you charge a little bit more, and you don't gouge people, but you charge what you're worth, and you know, people are going to pay it. I tell people this all the time. I'm telling you, an average ticket in a Best Buy, Staples, whatever, taking it in for any type of service, no matter what it is, your average ticket's going to be at least $200. At least. And a lot of times I've heard $350 and $450. So when you're charging, you know, $49 for a virus removal, it's not going to happen. You're going to get frustrated, because virus removals can be how many times have we gone through a virus removal and we've spent so much time on it and we finally go, I can't get it. I can't get it. I'm going to have to reinstall the operating system. Now I'm making literally no money because I've just spent, you know, hours on this, working on this machine. And it's like, we could have saved ourselves, you know, a ton just by going, okay, I'm going to charge a little bit more. I'm going to, you know, then it makes it feel a little bit better, I think.
Yeah. I got a little funny story about that. Back when I was doing the cheapo virus removals, I got a call from a customer. I got this screen on my computer, says it was seized by the Department of Justice for all sorts of bad things. And it was my first encounter with it. And of course, doing the cheapo virus removal, I ended up sitting at the client's house for some like 3 or 4 hours, just cleaning up this unbelievable mess of a virus. And I was kicking myself the whole way.
Yep.
I was like, oh, this is so not worth it. And then about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, I think it was, he calls me up. It happened again. I was like, man, what are you clicking? You've got to be clicking something that you got this twice. It's a pretty rare virus. I mean, most people are getting the crypto locker and all that. They seem to die down now, but it's like, this, you got it twice. You're my only customer who's got this virus and you got it twice. It was brutal.
Well, I had one of those customers, and he's a managed service client now. and guess
Easy
what?
Hook.
Exactly. And I, you know what? And I didn't have any, he didn't balk at all at me. He just said, okay, that's fine. Cause I said, do you want a working computer? When you open your computer up and you go to do whatever it is you do on your computer, do you just want it to work? If you do, then here's what you need, because all the things that you're doing, and some of it was not so nice, is basically going to infect your computer.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to avoid that for you. So because we're going to make sure that everything is updated, and at least it gives us a baseline. So if you do get infected, we can clear that out fairly quickly because we have all your stuff updated.
Yep. You know? I got a customer who does a lot of the not so nice stuff. And every time I go there, I say, man, you got to stop this. And he's like, just fix it. I was like, do you like calling me like every 3 weeks and having me come out and do the same thing? I was like, well, you just stop doing the not so nice stuff.
Yep,
please.
Exactly.
Or be a little smarter with it.
Oh boy.
It's a wonderful industry.
Yeah, well, you know, and it keeps us all working. So that's a good thing, I guess. No. All right. So I guess, do you have anything else to add? Any other stories or anything like that?
No, you know what? I think I'm all out. I think I'm on empty.
Okay. No, sounds good. We had a show full of good information, and you've taught me a couple of things, which I really appreciate. If people want to thank you for coming out on the show and taking your time. And then
it's my pleasure.
If people want to reach you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, they could shoot me an email, brian@briantechnology.com. If they want, they could send me a text or give me a call. The number is 631-403-0846. Really two best ways to get to me. I love to chat with people. I don't mind taking a couple minutes and chatting, giving some tips, a little help here and there. Don't hesitate to reach out to me. I love talking to people. But two best ways to get me, my email and my phone.
Awesome. Very good. Yeah. All right. Well, you guys can also find me on the Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, call 1-888-697-0162. And I just want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, Instant House Call and D72. Thanks for supporting the show. And don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for TechNibble Business Kit, or I think it's called the TechNibble Computer Business Kit, over at podnuts.com. The link's on the left-hand side. You can click on that link, and that helps out the Podnuts Network. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network the next time you're shopping in Amazon. Go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Hi folks, Lisa here from Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. Did you know that I have a brand spanking new show coming out called Call That Girl's Office 365 Show? You can check it out right here on the Podnuts Network by going to podnuts.com/CTG. Listen to all of my day-to-day problems and solutions I have with Outlook, third-party apps, and Office 365.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.